Welcome to the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. This is South Australia's summer cricket wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define cricket across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk cricket with Sophie Hilditch and Ben Hook.
Thanks, Wallace. Hello, Hookie. Welcome back to our cricket edition. It feels like it's been a while since we last spoke. How's your past week been?
Soph, it's been a great week, and I'll tell you why, because I really feel like cricket is upon us now. The Ashes, you can sniff them. We've had India here. That's been an amazing series. The Spring Challenge is the precursor to the WBBL, and I love the WBBL. So, yeah, particularly excited for where we're at and where we're heading.
100%, and I'm so excited to pick your brain. But before we get to the news, how about we start with an absolute crowd pleaser. Let's go to Ben's best.
I'll tell you what I need to do, Soph. I need to go with Sophie Starr, first of all, and you'll understand why very shortly. So I know you're in charge here, but I am going to pull rank on age and say, can you give me some Sophie Starr, please?
Well, I didn't really see this one coming, but I'm happy to go with it. I don't know what's quite happening here. But look, I'm a bit scared because I was hoping I'd go last because I'm actually throwing the rule book just completely out the window, and I'm quickly becoming Hooked on Sport's rules breaker, and I'm not even remotely ashamed to admit that. Rules are merely guidelines, and I learnt from the best, the one Ben Hook.
Yeah, they're to be broken, in my opinion. I'm with you here, Soph. I'm coming along for the ride.
You're coming along? Well, this week I'm not only just decided to choose a star outside of the cricketing world, but also I have chosen some stars with a capital S at the end of that. It's my Australian golfing girls, Minji Lee, Hannah Green, Steph Kiriakou and Grace Kim. I know our golfing pod is next week, but Hookie, please hear me out. We honestly could not wait another 7 days. These girls have just won the international crown, played over the weekend in the Republic of South Korea against the strong United States team. This is a teamed event consisting of teams from United States, Australia, Thailand, People's Republic of China, Japan, Republic of South Korea, Sweden, and a collective team which was just named World, which consisted of players from Canada, New Zealand, England, and Taiwan. Look, I'm sure we'll talk about it next week, but I'm so proud of our girls. It's the first time they've etched Australia onto the international crown, and I think it was a very deserving that Sophie Starr this week went to all four girls.
I have not an argument, and I did watch the last couple of holes of Hannah Green's match against Yulimi No, and the passion between the four of them was absolutely palpable. You could tell that it meant so much to them, Soph. So, look, I think Sophie Starr, Ben's best. We can send it where we like. It's not only is it our show, mate, it is your star and my best. So we take it wherever we want, which leads me to Ben's best.
Hookie, can I just hold you off for a second? Yeah. I knew this was coming, which is why I'm happy that I broke the rules today, because I knew you were just going to use this and run away with it. So let's see how you've broken the rules today.
Well, look, I've got a couple of, contenders for the prize that I just wanted to touch on but aren't going to be Ben's best. James McDonald, the jockey, 4 straight Cox plates, the last 2 on Via Sistina, is absolutely incredible. I wanted to give a special mention to Adam Bland, who's barely a touring professional golfer anymore, but was runner-up in the WebEx Series event at Wollonga yesterday. I can't go past just mentioning Virat Kohli, who sent us all away as an international cricketer for India here in Australia with that delightful 70-odd not out. The final time we'll see him here in Australia in Indian colours. And then I just wanted to give a mention to your sport as well. The Adelaide Fire women are 2 wins from 2 matches. They beat the Perth Thundersticks on a rain-delayed match, beat them 4-2, came back from behind twice, Soph. It was absolutely incredible, and they were just so excited with the win. But you're not going to believe this. Ben's best today is Sophie Hilditch after a sterling performance in the Royal Adelaide Club Championship. I was having a look at the scores, and I see you were the highest qualifier, Soph. So how can I go past my mate Sophie for Ben's best today? It is Sophie Hilditch with a qualifying round of 76, first round, I think, washed out, second round 76, leading qualifier, and a chance to shoot for, what would this be, your 4th club championship?
I'm so embarrassed. This is embarrassing, Hookie, but I will take it. I was hoping I could fly under the radar so I didn't need to talk about it next weekend just in case.
Good luck.
I don't even step onto Sunday, but...
I am plastering your life all over this podcast, Soph, and I'm starting with your 76 yesterday. So well played. Great round. A very, very tough condition, Royal Adelaide at the moment, and it was pretty windy as well, wasn't it? So you'd be pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, I was pretty pleased with it. I was telling Wallace just before we actually started this pod that I was having such a lovely smooth sailing front nine, and then my back nine, it was just like a train wreck coming through, and all five of those shots making my 76 came about in the back nine. So, look, I'm happy I get to restart, and I've got a few days to regroup before I play my semi-final on Saturday. But thank you, Hookie, for being your star of the week. Incredibly embarrassing, and I'm glad that all our listeners are now going to have to wait for next Monday, where I'm probably going to have to talk about it.
And good luck giving me a yellow card for breaking the rules when I've given it to you. So you're in charge, Soph. Move us on. Where do you want to go from here?
Yeah, look, Hookie, I want to go to the news around the globe. You touched on it at the top of the show, but obviously Australia has been playing India in the one day a series. And look, Australia won that series 2-1. The series was incredibly exciting. First game in Perth, Australia easily won that by 7 wickets. I then personally watched the game at Adelaide Oval, where Australia successfully chased down India's 264 runs with 2 wickets to spare. The crowd was just incredible, Hookie, as it always is when India comes to play in Australia. Friendly and respectful banter by the patrons. However, India, like you touched on with one of your Sophie star, stormed home in the final match at the Sydney Cricket Ground. Two of the modern greats, Sharma and Kohli, steered their team to a smashing win with an enormous 9-wicket victory. And look, just an incredible, incredible end to this series. And I want to touch on what you think came from the series, because we're about to go into a T20 five-match series with India, and I don't think this is the best start to that series for Australia.
Oh, no, look, one-day series, these bilateral series, are usually meaningless anyway, and this one had all the hallmarks of being more meaningless than most of them. I mean, the World Cup's not till 2027, so they really don't have a lot of relevance to where you're heading in the World Cup. Stage of the 4-year cycle. However, there was something really beautiful about this series, and I think you identified it really well. So game one washed out. Funny rule, I think, and that's probably something we might discuss at some point, because South Australia and Queensland played out a very similar sort of game where, gee, I thought the Queenslanders were on the rough end of the Duckworth-Lewis-Stern rules for another time. Let's just talk about the one-day series. Game two, an absolute glimpse into the future of the Australian white ball cricket team. Cooper Connolly was superb out of the middle order to make those runs and carry Australia home. Matt Short, someone that we've seen in T20 with the Adelaide Strikers and start to make his way into the Australian cricket team, really played a vital innings through the top and the middle of that innings as well. So just a beautiful glimpse into where Australia's heading. And then I thought we had this wonderful nostalgia of where India have come from in game three with that wonderful partnership from Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli. So, yeah, I think in the overall scheme of things, it means very, very little. But for both of those reasons, I really did enjoy the series and what it offered us with regard to what we can look forward to with Australia and what we can be really grateful for with what we've seen with India in the past.
Oh, gee, that is just actually a beautiful way of looking at it. And I really appreciate it. I hadn't viewed it like that. And I don't often give you credit, but credit is definitely due here.
Gee, I'm going to make you Sophie's Ben's best every week, so.
You're just softening me up straight off the top. I can't feel like I can't just come back at you straight away. But let's turn to the Australian in the Women's World Cup. It's also an ODI. A couple of days ago, Australia, huge win over South Africa with spinner Alana King delivering the greatest spell in World Cup history, taking 7 wickets. This meant that Australia finished the round-robin stage of the ODI tournament undefeated and will be facing the host country, India, in the semi-final in Mumbai. Hookie, what's your prediction for this game?
Before we get to my prediction, Soph, I just have to touch on Alana King and that spell against South Africa. Now, I'm a fair bit older than you. I reckon you're probably, or maybe still being bundled up in your mother's arms back in 1999. But I can remember Shane Warne in a World Cup in England bowling at South Africans and absolutely bamboozling them in that famous semi-final where Australia tied with South Africa, and because they were the higher-ranked team at the time, they went through. Shane Warne really turned that game around. I think he took 4 for 30 or something like that from his 10 overs. It was one of the most amazing spells, and I saw some Alana King in that. She was just irrepressible. She's getting the ball to drift into the South African batter's pads, so getting it to the leg side of their left eye and then spinning it past their right eye. Whether it's outside edges, mishits, or clean bowled, four of them clean bowled. It was just the most incredible spell. So, yeah, we have to just say that was just superb to watch Alana King completely destroy a South African team, just like Shane Warne had done. I mean, Soph, we've been waiting for years and years and years for the next Shane Warne to come along, and we've never seen it in men's cricket, and here she is. She's in the women's team. It's something really special, isn't it? We go to the semi-final against India. It's probably the worst possible draw because even though this is an ICC tournament, you know that the BCCI fingerprints are going to be all over it. They're going to produce a wicket that is going to be cherry ripe for the Indians. You just wonder what that is. I wonder if they need to go and try and produce a really, really good batting wicket, because I think of all the things that Australia is doing very well in the women's game at the moment, there are just some little vulnerabilities in their batting. So, yes, Alyssa Healy's been amazing. Ash Gardner has been incredible. And a few other have played their roles, in particular Annabelle Sutherland. But we've had some collapses as well. Elise Perry really hasn't fired a bullet as yet. Phoebe Litchfield's been okay without being sensational. Taylor McGrath hasn't done a heck of a lot either, if we're being honest, as South Australians. So, yeah, I would have loved to have seen them play England or South Africa, to be honest, and hopefully one of them could have taken India out. But this is going to be a huge challenge to beat them. They should be favourites, but they're probably going to face some conditions that they won't want to face, and I think that's what India will prey upon. I reckon this is an absolute coin flip. Can't wait for the game. It's going to be amazing. But, yeah, very, very tough draw for Australia from here. And we have seen historically in World Cups that teams who struggle a bit early tend to play better in the later part of the tournament, and Australia is doing this a different way, trying to go through the whole thing undefeated. They win World Cups, don't they, Australia? So you can't rule them out. And I'm definitely not ruling them out. I think they'll win. But, yeah, this is going to be a tough, tough game, this semi-final.
Yeah, 100%. I think we actually spoke about this last fortnight as probably the scenario that we didn't want our women in. But look, I still think they're heading into, obviously, as favourites, and my money's still on them. But I agree with you, it's a bit of a coin toss. I also just wanted to touch on, and I didn't know if you saw it, Hookie, but Cricket Australia confirmed on Saturday that two of their players had actually been stalked and inappropriately touched by a man during this tournament. And I just think we need to tell our listeners about it. It's just pretty disgusting. Like, things like that are still happening in this day and age, particularly to the women. But kudos to those women, because they really did round together as a team, and look, they went out and won their next match. So I think it's a kudos to the team.
Just hope it doesn't emotionally affect them, Soph. Mm-hmm. And I'll be interested to see what happens with security around them now, because India and the subcontinent is the type of place that will completely overreact, and they'll be completely stifled by having security all over them and really almost being just as inappropriate as what this man was. That's, you know, it's terribly unfortunate. We hope that, they're just not emotionally affected by it, because there's every possibility that's the case. We just wish them all the best, and it's very, very sad that that happened.
Yep, 100%. Just another hurdle, unfortunately, that they'll have to leap over. Now, turning to the Ashes, like you said, I can smell it. I can smell the pims at the Adelaide Test match, and gosh, am I excited. Let's go to the whiteboard. What do you reckon the team is looking like?
Well, I'll tell you what we can say from the whiteboard, Soph, is that the captain is out. That was the official announcement today. No Pat Cummins for Australia in the first test. And then the question becomes, can he front up for the second test? It's only 9 days after the first test finishes, Soph. So the idea that you can rule him out 3 weeks from the first test but have any confidence that he's going to be available for the second test, I think is a bit much to ask. I think what Australia needs to do now with Patrick Cummins is simply say, what do we reasonably think we can get out of him? I would be maybe penciling him in for the third test in Adelaide and the final test in Sydney. And if the series is already done by Sydney, then you wouldn't risk him anyway. But that's probably where I'd be leaning towards. You could argue that Scott Boland is going to be very suitable for Test 1, a little bit of a break into Test 2, good break, miss Test 3, and then go and play his famed Melbourne Test, Test 4. I think that makes some sense. But I do think we need to really think about the way Australia structures up with no Pat Cummins, which does have an adverse effect on their batting as well as their bowling, and the potential that Cameron Green isn't going to be able to bowl. Be interesting to see. We've got a Sheffield Shield game, South Australia versus Western Australia over there in Perth tomorrow. Going to be fascinating to see what Green does. But it has made my whiteboard team, you know when you get the, you lick your thumb, you know, and then you have to rub something out and put something back in? That's what I've done a bit, Soph. I'm going to give you my team. Constance I had in a fortnight ago, out. I don't think he's going to make the team. And Jake Weatherald comes in. I'm picking an opener, a professional opener, a guy who does it full-time for a living to open the batting with Usman Khawaja. I do think Mitchell Marsh is a very, very strong possibility of coming in later in that series, in particular because it gives you a right-left-hand combination to bat with one of those two lefties. I've got Manus Labuschagne to bat at 3, Steve Smith to bat at 4, Travis Head to bat at 5, then Cameron Green to bat at 6, Alex Carey at 7, wait for it, I'm picking Bo Webster at 8. Mm-hmm. I'm picking Mitchell Starc at 9, Josh Hazlewood at 10. And my number 11 is a choice between Scott Boland or Nathan Lyon. And I think in the first test, the pitch is going to be so suited to fast bowling that maybe a spinner is overrated. And you could maybe go in with essentially the 5 quicks and no spinner. So that's my team right now. Soph, where are you at?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. I actually tend to kind of agree with you. Constance was in my team a fortnight ago as well, and look, his Sheffield Shield performance just hasn't been up to standard. I also just don't – I haven't really been impressed with what he's done in the off-season in terms of his technique. I just don't think it's ready for Test cricket just yet. And look, Weatherald's performance so far, like you said, it's been outstanding in Sheffield Shield, and it's hard to ignore. Look, other than that, I tend to agree with you. Apart from Mitchell Marsh, Mitchell Marsh, to his own words, has basically said he's not expecting an Ashes slot. I think directly quoted, it's something was like, by day one at lunchtime, he's hoping to already have 7 beers under his belt. So, look, that's probably my only argument against you. But I'm pleased if it happens for you.
The only thing going against Mitch Marsh and his 7 beers by lunch on day one is he's not a selector, and they may well pick him to be 7 not out runs on at lunch on day one. Going to be fascinating to see. And I reckon, so in 2 weeks' time, we'll sit down, we'll have the same conversation and probably have two different teams. With Pat Cummins out, Steve Smith is going to be the captain. I want your thoughts on this. Why are we going for Steve Smith and not Travis Head? They are joint vice captains. Why is it always Steve Smith who defaults to be the captain when Pat's out?
Yeah, look, it's a very interesting question. And if I'm being wholeheartedly honest, I don't actually think Steve Smith should have got given a leadership role after the 2018 sandpaper scandal. I know that's probably a very controversial point of view. But look, now that they
it's not controversial, Soph. A lot of people would agree with you. I'm not one of them, to be honest, but it is not a controversial opinion from the perspective that a lot of people think that him, Warner, and Bancroft should have been banned for life.
Yeah, look, I don't think banned for life. That's not quite as far as I would have gone, but leadership role, 100%, I don't think he should be in it. But now that Australia has put him in that leadership role, and it's been kind of known that he is a bit of the senior vice captain as opposed to Travis, I think he's the logical approach then for him to take over the captaincy. And like you said, Pat Cummins is out. The Australian team's already in a bit of turmoil. I think they need the stability, and therefore, as Steve Smith is the more senior person, I think he makes sense in this situation.
I just think there's been a lack of planning for the future with the Australian team. Travis Head, well, let's forget Travis Head for a second. Pat Cummins and Steve Smith are in the twilight of their careers. Steve Smith may not play beyond this Ashes series. He always gives a bit of an impression that he's not absolutely in it for the long haul, and you can understand that. He's 37, for goodness sake. But he's also living in New York. He's hardly dedicated to the cause. I would find it hard to believe. You imagine a football captain, right, Soph? So let's say you're captain of the Adelaide Crows, and you say to everyone, listen, you've got to be absolutely fully committed, you've got to be into the cause, And I'll see you a couple of weeks out from the start of the most important series that we've got ahead of us. I just don't think it works like that. And then I also think that while Travis Head is there and the logical next Australian captain, why wouldn't you give him some opportunity to do some captaining while you've still got Steve Smith on the field with him? Steve Smith's a good leader. He's not a great captain. He's not the person that we absolutely need to be running this team. Travis Head is going to be running this team in 2 years' time unless he abjectly decides he doesn't want the job. He's vice captain, so he must want it in some form. Why wouldn't you be getting him to do the job in Sri Lanka when Pat Cummins had the series off? Why wouldn't you be getting him to do the job now in an Ashes series when you've still got Steve Smith there anyway to guide him through? I think there has been some, I would call it future-proofing. They had an opportunity to future-proof the Australian cricket team and its leadership, and I think they've let themselves down by continuing to run Steve Smith in Cummins' absence. I think it's a mistake.
Call out to Wallace Long. Can we replay the tapes from about 2 months ago when I reckon I got asked a fair and fast question as to whether or not Travis Head would be the next captain? And my co-host Ben Hook said he doesn't think Travis Head wants it. What a turn of events. Like, I'm just getting absolute, it's like a roller coaster with you sometimes.
Well, to be honest, I don't think he really does covet the job, and I think he's been happy to allow Steve Smith to take it. And it's wrong, Soph. Travis, if you're listening, and I'm sure you're one of our thousands of listeners out there, mate, take the job, for goodness sake. You should be captain of the Australian Test team. You belong in that chair. Steve Smith will be a great support for you. Just go and take the job. Tap him on the shoulder. Go and have a word to our mate Andy McDonald. We're old friends. We're of similar vintage, and I'm sure he will agree with Hooked on Sport, the podcast, that Travis Head should be captaining Australia. I mean, I'm being a little bit flippant here, but I honestly believe that he would be a better option to captain the Australian Test team right now, and I don't understand why they are just so set that it's Steve Smith who takes the job when Pat Cummins is away.
Look, I love it, Hookie. I did say it last time. I love Travis Head as a captain and I got absolutely poo-pooed by you. So I'm glad you finally started listening to me. Took some time, but I'm glad you got there.
Anyways, listen to you, Soph.
Anyways, Hookie, let's go to the news around the country. SA versus Queensland in the One Day Cup. It was a win in the Duckworth-Lewis-Stern method, which is a mathematic method used for a limited over cricket to calculate a fair target score when a match has to be shortened by external factors. So in this situation, it was rain. SA won the toss in this game. They elected to bowl. The match was restricted to a maximum of 25 overs each. Queensland were all out for 128. The revised total became 120. And SA were victorious with a 1 for 122. Thoughts on the game?
My only thought on the game is that if that is what the DLS system throws up, then the DLS system is absolutely abjectly wrong, mm-hmm. and it needs to be sorted out. So the whole idea of the Duckworth-Lewis-Stern system was that if you had your innings shortened while you're in it, then you needed to be credited with the fact that the totals that you were dealing with were changing all the time. So I could not understand when Queensland all out 128 and the total became 120 to win. Mm. It is crazy to me, that system. South Australia won it, as they were always going to do, because the rules really gave them a leg up. It's a dumb system, and something needs to be done to right that, because I can't understand how that can be the system. I mean, they were 2 for 12, I think, when the rain came. I was at this game, so they were 2 for 12 when the rain came. And I think what the argument is, they'd already lost 2 wickets in a 50-over game. They were going to struggle to post a big score. But, you know, when you get shortened by rain, it completely changes your approach. And to have to do that on the fly, I think, is why you deserve a credit in runs rather than a debit in runs, and that's what Queensland got. Strange stuff, but that's what happened. Good win to SA. They're right back in that competition. I think they're in second position now, only behind New South Wales.
Yeah, definitely a good result for SA, and you make some interesting points. We even got the bonus point, noting that they only needed to win inside 20 overs, which was a massive thing as well for SA in their endeavour to get back that trophy. But look, let's turn to the women, the Spring Challenge, which is a T20 tournament where 9 teams, including the Big Bash teams and the ACT Meteors, play off for the trophy. All 9 teams play 4 other sides in the league, and the top 4 performers will progress to the semi-finals, which is being played on the 29th of October. Our SA Strikers in their campaign beat the Melbourne Stars and then lost to ACT Meteors Melbourne Renegades, and unfortunately also the Sydney Thunder. This unfortunately ends their campaign for the Spring Challenge. Did you catch any of these matches, Hookie?
Plenty of it so far. Just keep these things on. I am such a nerd. I've always got something going on in the background while I'm trying to work in my laptop. So I did keep a bit of an eye on these games. Look, it's a Spring Challenge. It's the warm-up series for the WBBL. Sides are a bit depleted, so there is no need for crisis meetings here. But the Adelaide Strikers were pretty poor, if we're honest. They finished second last. And here's some stats that I think concern me. They had one bowler inside the top 20 for wickets, and that was Issa Malgioglio, who was tied 20th for wickets. So we had no one in the top 19 for wickets. And then if you look at now, Issa Malgioglio, I mean, wonderful player. She's come over to South Australia. She's not in the Adelaide Strikers squad. So our best wicket taker in the Spring Challenge isn't going to be playing in the WBBL. And then you look at the batting. Matty Penner was top scorer for the competition with 229 runs. You got a wonderful century yesterday, Soph, in that loss that they had to the Sydney Thunder. But she was number one. The next highest ranked Adelaide Strikers player was Eleanor La Rosa, who was 30th with 58 runs. So none of that says to me they're going into the WBBL, which is only 2 weeks away, in incredible form. I'd be a little bit concerned with that. Like I said, warm-up games, no need for crisis. But, yeah, that was a bit underwhelming, I thought. I've got one other thing. Gemma Barsby is probably the best four or five batters in our team, and she's batting at seven. Don't get that either. They should have been using her as a pinch hitter up the order a bit more. It doesn't make any sense to me that she was batting as far down as she was.
Yep, Hookie, very interesting points. Those stats haven't filled me with much confidence, but like you said, just a warm-up series. Hookie, look, we're having way too much and too many rants for this, so I think we're going to have to do something. Jump across from our local sport. Wallace, indulge me. I think you're going to have to do a separate pod, part two, just about local cricket and community cricket. And Hookie, let's jump straight to the Hooked on Sport Player of the Year, which is running similar to the Brownlow Medal.
Just to clarify here, it's similarly to the Brownlow Medal, except our votes are far more accurate than the umpires in the Brownlow Medal. I like to think that we're well and truly across these things. The Sheffield Shield game between South Australia and Queensland, look, it feels like it's an eternity ago. It was only about a week ago now. And, of course, South Australia takes on Western Australia tomorrow. That's going to be a really fascinating game. Brendan Doggett back for South Australia. But if I give you the votes, I gave three to Wes Agar, who bowled his heart out in the first innings. I'm doing this off the top of my head, Soph, but Queensland, I think, put on 396 in their first innings. Wes Agar took 5 for 88. So just do the maths on the rest of the contribution amongst the bowling attack. Wes was superb. I gave two votes to Connor McInerney, who got away both times as an opening batter. It's always difficult to do, in particular batting on day one of a Sheffield Shield game in October at Adelaide Oval. So I was really impressed with him. And then my one vote went to Jason Sanger, who, similar to Connor McInerney, played a couple of really important innings for South Australia. Neither of them went on with it and got 100. That's probably why Wes Agar's got the three and they're the two and the one, respectively. But they are my votes from the Sheffield Shield game, South Australia versus Queensland. Wes Agar, 3. Connor McInerney, 2. Jason Sanger, 1.
Yep, look, I'll take you over to the one-day cup, which was SAV Queensland. You were too busy going on a massive rant about the Duckworth-Lewis-Stern method that you reluctantly failed to mention Nathan McSweeney, who was man of the match. He took 3 wickets, was 38 not out of 37. Look, he's getting my 3 points, giving 2 points to Mac Harvey for his unbeaten half century, and then 1 point to Lloyd Pope for 2 for 27 on a wet day. I reckon it's a good form from a leggy. Hookie, what's our leaderboard looking like? I know we're going to have to do some clever maths with the women playing less games, but where is it currently standing?
Well done, Soph. I do feel a little guilty that I didn't mention a couple of the guys that played really well for South Australia in that ridiculous Duckworth-Lewis-Stern ruling. But here's our leaderboard. Mackenzie Harvey is on 7 votes, so he's been wonderful once again in the one-day competition. Wes Agar and Jake Lehman are tied on 5 votes. And then we have a big group on 3. Nathan McSweeney, Jordan Buckingham, Nathan McAndrew, Henry Hunt, Courtney Webb, Ellie Johnson, and then the 2s and 1s to come. So what that does look like at the moment, Soph, is that the men are getting every advantage over the women. At the end of the year we will even that up. So we'll be making a comparison between the amount of games the men have played across the four-day and the one-day comp and the amount of games the women have played across the one-day comp. And the women will get a bonus on a pro-rata basis for the fact that they'll end up playing less games. So even though it looks like it's a pretty strong men leaderboard at the moment, the women will come, that's for sure.
Yeah, our listeners can't see, but Wallace is just looking down just in absolute disgust at us because he knows he's about to have to do this mass. But, Hooky, good as always. I encourage our listeners to jump across, which will be part two, all to do with our local sport. But enjoyed it, and I can't wait to speak to you more about local cricket, Hooky.
I'm rubbing my hands together already, Soph.
That stumps on this episode of the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. Thanks for listening. Help us reach more cricket-minded people just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company next time on the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show.